If something's lost, it can be found. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, a podcast you won't find marked on any map. In 2007, the video game Uncharted Drake's Fortune was released, and it quickly became a huge hit. With its blend of action and adventure, many people drew parallels between this computer game and films like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Tomb Raider. Given its success, Hollywood immediately saw the potential of a big screen version of this home computing hit, and in 2008, Sony announced that development work on a film had begun. What followed was 14 years of on-again, off-again production, as a litany of different directors, actors, and producers tried to get this thing made. Among the names who were attached to this film at different times, you had people like David O. Russell, Joe Carnahan, Dan Trachtenberg, and Sean Levy. But fast forward to 2022, and a movie of Uncharted is finally with us. To help me review the film, I'm joined by a man who lives his life permanently trapped in development hell. Back once again, it's Nick Rehack. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great, Will, except for the hell. How are you?
I wouldn't say I'm in heaven. It's maybe okay. Purgatory is a kind of more accurate description of my location.
Okay.
Now, this film took about 14 years to get off the ground, and getting this podcast together didn't take anywhere near as long as that. This one wasn't really in the schedule. Sort of two things cropped up at the same time. I learned that this film had an exploding helicopter, and I put that together with the fact that I know that you are a fan of the Uncharted game series. Now, I've never played that game before, probably like some of the others listening here. So I wondered if you could give us a quick overview of what type of game this is, what it's all about, and why you're into it.
Totally. So Uncharted is an action-adventure game series. It's more Indiana Jones than it is Tomb Raider, in a sense that you're learning a lot more about the history of the world and the history of, you know, the treasures that historically have happened throughout the world. Some things they do tweak it a little bit to add more of a fantasy or a fictitious element to it, but most of it is grounded in the nonfiction. There's been four games so far. You follow this character, Nathan Drake. He's a treasure hunter, procurer, and he just goes all over the world trying to find these lost treasures. He's done ones where he's gone to Shambhala. He's looked for the Fountain of Youth. He's gotten mixed up in some like Nazi gold history stuff. Like, there's been a lot of excitement.
Love that Nazi gold.
And it's a big part. Each game has gotten better. What really separates this though from other games is the writing and the storytelling. It is so well done. The way there are some nonlinear elements in the game, the way the characters interact, the way just how it's written, the twists and the turns and the excitement. Like, every time you play it, I'm like, I want to be in this world. I want to be this character. Good, bad, ugly, all of it. And it's just, they're just so much fun to play. If anybody ever has the chance to play them, like, I highly recommend it.
Okay. So I was interested in this idea that they were educational. I mean, I thought, you know, games are just meant to be, you know, it's just meant to be entertainment. Are you just trying to put a sort of a gloss on this game that makes you feel better about spending so much time with it?
Oh, no, not at all. there's a lot of shoot 'em ups and bang bangs in the game, sure, but there's also a lot of puzzles. And to understand some of the puzzles, you had to have been paying attention in the game. Now, the character Nathan does have a little notebook, and sometimes he will write down things that he finds interesting or peculiar. He'll do a couple drawings and things like that, and you can use those towards the puzzles that you have to help solve in order to get to the next room.
Okay. Well, I think you've set the scene nicely for the film that we're going to be talking about. So let's get stuck into our sort of main review of Uncharted. But before we do that, let's find out if Mark Wahlberg can find something to complain about.
Hey, kid. A little young for a bartender, aren't you?
A little old for prom, aren't you?
Everything in here. Why the map?
It's the biggest treasure that's never been found.
5 billion, easy.
But it's just a story.
I beg to differ.
Years ago, my family found the world's biggest fortune, then was betrayed. People have been searching for it all in vain.
Both you turn the keys clockwise at the same time. Thanks a lot. He almost got me killed.
Clockwise, Sully!
Well, it was 50-50, so I made a guess.
Clearly.
But the forgery was not just about gold. It was something much more valuable.
This cross has a very tragic history. So much blood.
I'm pretty sure he just threatened to kill me.
Oh, this is gonna suck!
Don't get caught.
You were just gonna leave me back there.
Somebody had to get the cross.
Now, I should say at the outset here, we will be getting into spoilers. Generally, we're reviewing older films on the Exploding Helicopter podcast, so we generally don't worry too much about spoilers. But I appreciate this is a new film that's out in cinemas at the moment. So if you are planning to see it, then you might want to bail on this particular episode. But otherwise, consider yourself warned, because we are going to be talking spoilers here. So, in terms of the plot and story, street smart thief Nathan Drake is recruited by seasoned treasure hunter Victor Sullivan to recover a gold fortune lost by the famous Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. Their quest starts with a daring heist before the duo set out on a globe-trotting race against time to find the prize before the ruthless Moncada, who believes himself the rightful heir to the treasure, can get his hands on it. Can Nate and Sully decipher the clues to one of the world's oldest mysteries? Will they discover the fate of Nate's long-lost brother? Who knows? You could watch the film or you could listen to this podcast. The choice is yours. As Nathan Drake, we have Billy Elliot himself, Tom Holland. As Sully, we have the ever unlikable Mark Wahlberg. Now, he's an interesting person in terms of the history of this film. So, as we mentioned in the intro, this film had... they've been trying to make a film for this game for years. Wahlberg was looking at making this back in 2010 with himself in the role of Drake, but with the passage of time, he kind of rather aged out of that particular role. So he's now playing the older mentor character here. In the supporting cast, we have Antonio Banderas, Sophia Ali, and Tatiana Gabriel. It's directed by Ruben Fleischer, who made the two Zombieland films. This has had a pretty tepid reception by critics, I think that's fair to say, with many saying it's rather derivative, it's a rather derivative exercise in filmmaking. It's early days, obviously it's only recently come out, but it's currently got a 6.8 user rating on IMDb. But with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of Uncharted?
Honestly, it was better than I thought it was going to be. When I heard it was Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg, I thought, okay, I can maybe see Holland, but the only way that works in the long run is if this turns into like a 20-year franchise and we see Holland grow up as Drake and get to the older Drake that we know in the game series. But when I saw Wahlberg, I'm like, he is completely miscast. Like, there's no way he could be it. And he was. Like, he was truly just Mark Wahlberg being Mark Wahlberg. There was nothing Sully about him. There was, I mean, just absolutely nothing. But that being said, there was some really fun set pieces. There was a lot pulled from the games in this. The dynamic between the characters, some characters they nailed, some they absolutely didn't. Mm. But just overall, this way I'm not just talking the whole time. Overall, it was better than I thought it was going to be. Because I remember seeing the trailers and going, oh, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
But it was better than suck. So.
Well, I think both of us probably have a similar opinion on this film. Because it was fine. I mean, it was okay. I find it very... The worst thing in the world often is I think... trying to find something to say about average films, and this one was a very, very average film. I mean, you know, it's 2 hours. I don't know. The biggest takeaway I had after watching this film was I'm 2 hours nearer the end of my life. I didn't hold that against the film. I didn't feel particularly resentful, but you know, that was about as much as I could say for the experience of watching this particular film. And you know, I was kind of trying to think of like what are the reasons why I think that. And for me, I'm a pretty simple film viewer. You just all you need to do is you just need to make me care. You need to make me care about the characters, and you need to make me care about what they're trying to achieve. And that, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a big thing that they're trying to do or a small thing, whether they're trying to save the world or, you know, reconnect with their dad or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I just need to care about the characters. I just need to care about what they're trying to do. And this film, I didn't care about the characters. I found them one-dimensional. I didn't care about whether they found this gold treasure or not. I mean, there were no stakes in this film. I have never played the computer game. I hadn't even seen the trailer before going into this thing, so I was flying very blind. I mean, you seem very middling on it as well, so it's kind of interesting, because I thought, well, you know, maybe this just works better for somebody who is a fan of the film and is bringing that history of the games with them to this movie, because then they're seeing these computer game characters, you know, made flesh by these actors. But it sounds as if, yeah, you know, this didn't really get your adrenaline pumping.
It didn't. I mean, I will give them props though. Sophia Ali as Chloe is perfect. Like, you could not have cast anyone better. She, it's weird because she isn't introduced until the second game, and then she's kind of in and out. But her dynamic, everything that character is, it's as if they just plucked her out of the game and threw it into the movie. Like, that's how well she did. That's how well she was to her character. And Holland, like I said, he was better than I thought it was going to be. I think his big thing was just his age. Nathan Drake is an older fella, like late 20s, early 30s. And I do like the fact that they would kind of have moments of Holland just kind of laying there trying to catch his breath, because Drake does that. Drake is constantly like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, this is too much like work. You know, so they captured that essence. I just wanted a bit more from that character, a bit less cynicism and a little more playful, because there is a back and forth between Sully and Drake like that. But it's more of like a, hey, you're a father figure, like uncle to me kind of thing. There's not this like really bitter, like butting heads. Like, their dynamic was just not, I didn't like it. It was very drastic. Like, it was very combative and like double crossy. And there's a moment or two where their arcs go separate ways, or they have a disagreement and there's like a couple secrets revealed here and there. But it's nothing so drastic as to what I saw in this movie, where they're just constantly screwing one another over. And I'm like, this is a bit much, gang. Like, now it's starting to feel like any other treasure hunting movie where everybody's in it for themselves.
No, I completely agree with you. I don't know what they were trying to do with the dynamic between Nate and Sully. And I think part of it, unfortunately, is Mark Wahlberg, because Mark Wahlberg is always Mark Wahlberg. And, you know, Mark Wahlberg has been in some good films that I enjoy watching, but he is a very particular flavor, and he basically is always a bit of an arsehole. He's always a bit of a douche. And if the character in the film, you know, needs somebody who can be douchey, well, then, you know, Mark Wahlberg is your man, and he can deliver that. But he was just being his usual Mark Wahlberg self, and it wasn't a flavor that really added anything to the mix in this film. And yeah, I agree with you. I think he was badly miscast. I think with another actor in there and with a bit of work on the script, then, you know, you could add a much more interesting, you know, just a much more sort of enjoyable dynamic. You know, as interesting what you were saying about the Chloe character. She's somebody who sort of crops up in the series then.
Yeah, she shows up in the second one and a bit of the third one. But what's really interesting is Drake's love interest in the series is his character named Alana. In the first game, Alana tags along with Drake as he's hunting for this hidden Nazi gold, right? He finds it, but it takes this very weird, paranormal, fantastical turn, and it's still super exciting. And then the games just kind of get away from the paranormal. They stick more grounded. But Alana is always with Drake. And to not have her in the film, I found to be super interesting. Now, to jump ahead a little bit, and again, like Will said, spoilers, the mid-credit scene where they tease about like Nazi gold and everything, and you see the guy with the eye patch, all of the characters that he mentions, Roman and everything like that, sets up the events for the first video game. Like, literally, that scene in the bar could have been a prequel to that game. It sets up the adventure they're going to have. So maybe if there's a second one, they kind of base it off of the first game and they introduce Alana. But to not have her in this and to see Drake and Chloe get very close, I thought was really interesting.
Really interesting if you are into the games.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair. Because it does seem rather ho-hum. There's not that excitement. Yeah. And I mean, Chloe still is kind of like working for the enemy, if you will. Like, she's definitely not the best character when you meet her. But there becomes like a mutual understanding between the two. But I think they took bits of Alana and they put it into Chloe's character. And then they had the two kind of like a will they, won't they kind of thing. And it's just like, okay, like, we get it. Let's do something else instead, though. But going back to Wahlberg's Sully, too, towards the end of the film, when you get like the mustache and the button-up shirt and the cigar and everything, it's like, okay, that's visually the Sully we see in the games, but it's still not Sully. Like, it's just – it's not.
I mean, you seem to look quite like Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. I mean, for me, again – interesting to get your perspective as someone who's familiar with the games. I mean, he just seemed... I didn't know what I was supposed to make of this character. I mean, he's... We first meet him. He's working in a bar. You know, he's like pretending he's like Tom Cruise in Cocktail or something. He's just a flashy cocktail shaker who then flirts with a female customer so that he can nick her bracelet. And that's how he seems to make his living. And I don't know. For me, I was like, well, okay, what am I supposed to think of this guy? Because it's not like that woman was really nasty to him in the bar, so he decided, okay, I'm going to steal her bracelet to get a little bit of revenge. I mean, he just seems to be like, you know, he's just using his charm to just, you know, heist a bracelet. So, you know, that's like a quite a dick move. I mean, I don't know why that as a character introduction makes me want to care about that character, and that kind of set things off on a kind of like a bad start to my introduction to this world and these characters.
Yeah, I didn't care for that part where he was still on the bracelet. He does do some bartending. He is technically like a treasure hunter. He's a bartender by day, treasure hunter by night kind of thing.
Okay.
It's just kind of a ways to make ends meet. So obviously all the extra cocktail kind of stuff, it's like, okay, we get it. But the way he carries himself and his demeanor, like a bit of a wise ass, but like also kind of smart and throwing out knowledge and stuff, that's definitely Drake all the way. But Drake was always more into like historical treasure and, you know, centuries old and something with a history to it. He wouldn't just be, like you said, nicking a bracelet. Like, that's not what he does. But I guess to show that, like, you know, he can do some sleight of hand stuff, he's quick on his feet and that kind of stuff. Okay, sure. But that part of me, I'm like, that's not who Drake is. Like, sure, he makes this decision or two in the game you might not agree with, and it might make him look weird, but then there's a payoff. There's something that connects to it. And we don't really see that with it. We see him like kind of snake it, sure, but we don't see him do anything else like that, right? I mean, yeah, he puts the false coordinates in the bottle for Chloe to find, which is something that, you know, the character would do in the game. but, you know, there's just – I don't know, that was a little weird to me.
Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on this area already a little bit, but I thought I might as well give you free rein on it. And, you know, as we've already established, you know, you're a fan of the game series here. So I wanted to know kind of how the filmmakers had brought this game to life on the big screen. I mean, we know there are a lot of celibate white men out there who have way too much of their personal identity invested in this film. So as a spokesman for that group, Nick, I mean, what did this
film... How dare you?
What did this film get right and what did it get wrong?
The film gets the character of Chloe right, absolutely nails it. And then it gets the set pieces right, absolutely nails it. The set piece where he's hanging off of the very beginning, where he's hanging off the cargo's containers leading up to the cargo ship, that's straight out of the third game, Drake's Deception. Most of the film they pull from Uncharted 4, the most recent one, A Thief's End, just with the entire adventure and everything. They obviously change up the villains. They have people that are a little more one note instead of the more colorful characters that we get in the game series. The dynamic between Drake and Sully just completely wrong, which is a bummer because I was kind of hoping to see, you know, something more like chummy, almost like a buddy cop kind of thing. But we don't really get that. The winks and nods throughout the game is fun. When they're in the, I guess, under the sewers, and all of a sudden they cut from under the sewers, there's all this weird like wooden gears and turning and everything, and then it gets up to Wahlberg at the top of like near the fountain and everything. That's a huge shout out to this really big clock tower that you have to climb. I thought that was really fun. There's little flitters and flutters in the score that harken back to the game, and they actually, there's a cameo for the voice actor Nolan North, who plays Nathan Drake in the video games, as they're coming out of the water and the guys on the beach, he's like, what's happening to you guys? Like, that's Nolan North. He even looks very similar to the Drake from the video games. And so to see him, I was like, I'm glad they put him in there.
I was wondering what that scene was about. And then like reading afterwards, I was like, I saw that. Yeah, that's the guy who kind of does the voice in the computer games. Cause it is, if you're not like, it stands out as like, okay, this is a bit weird scene. I'm obviously missing something here. But yeah, reading up afterwards, I got myself clued in as to what was happening there.
Yeah, if you're in the right theater, there'll be a moment of, oh my God, that guy's right. You'll hear the whispering and then they'll know, or you'll hear like a couple claps or something like that. But for the most part, they have, and then the origin story of how the two meet is rather different. They talk about it in the third film. Basically, Nate's in this museum and he's trying to steal this ring. So he's able to better search for, I think that's the one where he's looking for Shambhala. I can't remember. But with that one, it takes him to like the Crusade crypts. It takes him off to Yemen. There's all kind of wild stuff that happens in that game. But that's how he meets Sully. He meets Sully because he's caught by these henchmen, and Sully comes through and rescues him and is like, you know what? There's something about you, kid. And then takes him on as his protege. It's not one of those like, hey, I immediately know everything. Like, you definitely make mistakes along the way in the game, which is fun because Sully's there to kind of bust your balls a little bit and be like, oh, it's like that time in Caracas, or it's like that time. You know what I mean? There's that real buddy cop mentality, and we just do not get that in this game. And I think that hurts the game most. You can have a one-off or a ho-hum villain. That's fine. You can have a very generic adventure where they're only going to go to, like, you know, just the most basic of countries. I'm not saying Barcelona is basic or the Philippines are basic. I'm just saying, like, you know, you can have just very one-note locations. But if you have the dynamic that Drake and Sully have in the game, in the movie, you're going to really enjoy yourself regardless.
I like how you've you written off Spain as a basic country.
It's not.
But let's not get bogged down in that. Let's get bogged down in something else instead, which is the villains. And you mentioned, I think just now, that you thought they were a bit one note, and I think I'm inclined to agree with you, because you know, as a former guest of this show, Tai Singh always says, a hero is only as good as the villain. And you know, in this film we have Antonio Banderas as Moncada, and the kind of the film sort of sets him up in quite a good way, in the sense that we see him, you know, his quest for the treasure is going to be about to be thwarted by his father. So Banderas ruthlessly kills off his father, which you know, sets him up as okay, right, this guy's, you know, he's really going to let nothing get in his way. And so alongside Banderas, we have this obligatory team of henchmen led by this character called Braddock, who's meant to be this female badass, a kind of former sparring partner of Sully's. But then, two-thirds of the way through the film, Braddock kills off Banderas, and that sort of leaves her then as the main villain. And I guess they thought that was like a clever switcheroo, but I found that distinctly underwhelming. I just really didn't think it worked for me. I don't think that the Braddock character was interesting enough, and I don't think the actress was good enough to kind of pick up the slack that the film was sort of dumping on her.
It did surprise me when it happened, because I truly didn't see it happening, or at least in that moment. But then, like you said, there's nothing really exciting about Braddock. Braddock is a combination, I think, of like two or three different characters from out the series, and they put them together. For example, in the fourth game, where they're looking for the two ships like they find in this one, this film pulls very heavily from the fourth game. But when they're looking for that, there's a character they're working with called Rafe. And Rafe is the one that's going after them in Operatic. So you pull a little bit from Rafe. I think you pull a little bit of Marlow out of the second or third game. But either way, it's a combination and it just doesn't work. I feel like it doesn't take the eccentricities. Is that the right word I'm thinking of? Yeah, that one. It doesn't take that. It doesn't give the little uniqueness and excitement from those characters. And then it just doesn't translate to the screen.
I'd never met any of these characters before. You know, Antonio Banderas is, you know, he's always entertaining when you see him on screen. So I was like, okay, he's the villain, perfect. You know, he can act properly, but he can also chew scenery if needed. So I was like, okay, he's going to be the villain. I'm strapping myself in. I want to see what he's going to kind of do in this role. If you want to pull a little switcheroo like that, that's fine. You know, like I'm happy to be surprised. Like you, didn't see that coming. But unfortunately, I just don't think that the actress they had in that role, you know, was either set up by the script well enough or that she was a good enough actor to kind of, you know, because Banderas, you know, I mean, he's a real one-dimensional character, but he's a good enough actor to still make it work. And, you know, I was kind of thinking, you know, if you had a better actor or a different actor or actress in this particular role, it probably would have worked a bit better. I mean, you know, if you had somebody who was a bit more believable as a badass, you know, I was trying to think, you know, maybe somebody like Lena Headey or, you know, I mean, she'd obviously never do this film, but like somebody like Angelina Jolie, you know, if you had her in that role. Pun?
I said Lena Headey did do Dread.
Well, exactly. She'd be perfect in that kind of role. And you'd be, you know, that moment would just work so much better. Just left me frustrated. It just felt like when, you know, Banderas disappears out of the film, it just felt, you know, to me like, you know, air coming out of a balloon.
Yeah, it's the worst part is her character is very color by numbers. This is what the bad guys should do. This is, and like you said, you need someone with that charisma. You need someone that comes off as a badass. You need someone that kind of has that little darkness behind them where it's like, you know what? I think they're going to betray this person. And then when it happens, you're surprised, but you're like, yeah, no, totally. Like they definitely, but then when they become the one that's kind of running the show, they're the ones that all of a sudden need to kind of step up and come a little bit bigger as a character. They need to kind of have that screen presence. And she just doesn't, you know, it's just.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. She doesn't rise to that moment in the film, and I think it suffers. Okay, well, I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Out of a wasteland, ruled by fear and death, appears a young sorceress with undiscovered strength.
Girl, no woman can travel the world without a man to defend her.
Her only family, brutally murdered by a ruthless warlord. Now, in her thirst for justice, she joins forces with a renegade army of Amazons.
Men have nothing to say about what we do.
Let's take over.
For control of the wasteland, the Sisterhood. Now she must face unequal dangers as she begins her perilous quest. Where the Sisterhood confronts savage warriors of an ancient order. And the men of evil set on their destruction.
Three witches.
Too late till dark. Here we go down.
Together, they fight for their survival against a brutal enemy. Until they are forced to unveil the supreme power of the Sisterhood.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs during the film's finale. After discovering Magellan's 17th century sailing ships, the villains call in two transport helicopters to lift and carry the ships away. After Sully commandeers one of the helicopters, Nate stays on the deck of the ship and fights off Braddock's goons. When Braddock commands commands her pilot to ram the other ship into the ship that Nate's on, he loads up one of the ship's cannons and fires it at the helicopter. The Whirlybird is badly damaged by the antique weapon and spirals off before crashing into some rocks and exploding. Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I thought it was awesome. I was so excited. When he pulls the gunpowder, I'm looking at it like, now why would he? I'm like, maybe he's going to throw it at somebody and shoot it like a makeshift bomb or something like that. But then all of a sudden with the cannonball, I'm like, here we go. I'm like, well, I don't think we've seen anything like this in a while. It was interesting because the way the ship hits the side of that cliff and slings the helicopter around, this is weird. It immediately reminded me of Machete Kills and how when they shoot it with a harpoon and it just comes yanking it down, like that action with the cabling, that's what hit was that. But it was a beautiful explosion. This is one of those where I kind of wish we had the cliche where a character looks back and we see like just a quick snippet of the explosion or something. Like I wanted that little bit extra because of how impressive the fireball was and just how enjoyable the explosion was.
Well, like you, I thought this was a fantastic sequence of the film. For me, it was pretty much the highlight of it, and not just because it had an exploding helicopter in it, because it was I guess very unexpected. I mean, you don't expect to see two helicopters flying through the sky with 17th century sailing ships dangling from them, and you certainly don't expect them to start having an aerial duel whilst they are doing that. And I didn't find this film particularly great. And I kind of coming up to this sequence, I knew that we were in the final stretch of this movie. And this sequence, and I was kind of ready to get out of the cinema, but this sequence came along and just really perked things up. So we kind of finished on a big high, which was nice after so much middling content before it. But couple of interesting points to note here. The helicopters that we see in this sequence are a creation of the filmmakers. They don't actually exist in real life. They're a bit of a cross between two different types of helicopters, these Sikorsky sky crane helicopter with a kind of an extra rotor added on to the rear. So basically it looks like a Chinook, but it's kind of got the body of a Sikorsky sky crane. So yeah, an invention created for the films, but they look pretty cool. Now obviously the method of destruction, 17th century cannon, not something that you typically see being used in the destruction of helicopters, but we have seen an example of cannons being used to destroy helicopters before, and I don't know if you can remember what the film is, Nick. Really putting you on the spot, and I am enjoying
you
this
really
moment.
Are, and I'm trying to really run through my brain.
Think Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, you know what's so funny about that? I'm watching this and I'm like, man, this is, I'm kind of, the way it was like color tone, I'm like, this kind of reminded me of the Sahara. And I'm like, there's got to have been, and I'm thinking all these different things. And now like that makes total sense that we would see a cannon taking care of that as we did in Sahara. That's so funny.
Exactly.
Because they're treasure hunting too. Like it makes sense.
Well, that's obviously, that was a cannon from an American Civil War ship in the film Sahara that is used to blow up a helicopter in that movie. So I guess this film is currently the oldest film with a cannon that is used to destroy a helicopter. So suddenly I'm half remembering another film. That we might need to watch this, Nick. Actually, I think we need to do this one.
You know, I'm here for it.
Samurai Commando 1549. Some military forces from present day travel back in time to the 16th century in Japan, and they get these helicopters get blown up in that film. But I can't remember how. I can't remember if it's by modern weaponry or by 16th century. So anyway, for the moment, because I can't confirm it, for the moment, Uncharted is the oldest is the film with the oldest cannon used to blow up a helicopter. So yeah, if you go and watch this in the cinema, you're going to see an exciting exploding helicopter sequence, and you're going to see something that is pretty unique in terms of the type of weapon, and certainly it's the oldest cannon fire that is used to blow up a helicopter.
And it still makes one of the most unique exploding helicopter experiences that I've seen thus far. I mean, I know you and I have both seen some really wild ones. But this one is just, there's something, it's, they could have done a very cliche and boring thing where like the two collide or something like that. But to add that like little facet with the cannon and how it just grabs the cliff and kind of whips it around like that, that's a little more creative. And I appreciate at least the attempt on that part, because that succeeds unlike anything else.
I mean, there was, you know, in terms of exploding helicopters in films, there was a kind of trope of the exploding helicopter genre that that I always like to encounter. So I refer to it as Chekhov's chopper. So if you show the audience you know, a helicopter, or if a character, as in the case of this film, if a character mentions for no apparent reason that they used to fly helicopters, you can rest assured that that's going to play some important role by the third act. And that's the case here. So we see Mark Wahlberg dropping that little nugget that he used to be in the army and he used to fly helicopters early in the film. And then obviously that plays a critical role in the exploding helicopter sequence that we see at the end of the film. But I always enjoy seeing that particular trope, the Chekhov's chopper.
That is hilarious. I'm going to use that. I'm really going to use that.
Okay, well, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, thanks for riding shotgun on this episode with me. Do you want to plug some stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Rehack Radio, it's a little radio show I do. It comes out every so often. It used to be weekly, and now we're just, when it's out there, I'm happy about it. Over on Mixcloud.com. Recently, I joined Mark Hoffmeyer on Movies, Films, and Flicks, and we talked about our favorite jump scenes in films. That was a lot of fun. And one thing I want to do, check out the fan film by Alan Ungar on YouTube, UNGAR. This should have been what the Uncharted film was. It's Nathan Fillion as Nathan Drake, and the scene could easily be in this movie because of the different plot elements from this film. And also, Stephen Lang plays Sully, and that's what should have happened. It should have been Stephen Lang and not Mark Wahlberg.
Always enjoy seeing Stephen Lang in a film. So, I will go and check that out. As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website, explodinghelicopter.com, for reviews, facts, and stats on helicopter explosions in films. We'll be back soon, but until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.